Hello, everybody. This is Charles with the Barbershop Group Podcast, your host for the evening. I wanted to take the opportunity tonight to talk to you guys about something that took place maybe about 3 weeks ago that kind of led up to what we're going to do tonight. Probably about 3 weeks ago, the founder of Black Therapist Rock tagged the Barbershop Group and myself in a post where she indicated that she'd never taken her son to a Black barbershop before. And a lot of people chuckled at that. They kind of thought that was a little bit strange, and we won't spend too much time on that. But at any rate, she kind of gave a shout out to the Barbershop Group and to some other guys who are doing some work in the community to address mental well-being, to kind of help deal with the stigma of mental illness and just bring everybody forward a little bit. And one of the things that she mentioned was that, you know, that the conversation in the barbershop was very enlightening, that it wasn't what she anticipated, and that she was pleasantly surprised by her time and, experience at the barbershop. So I wanted to take the opportunity to get some of those guys on the show and have them talk a little bit more in depth about what the barbershop really represents for African-Americans, particularly, and for men, especially, what it represents. Because I think a lot of times it's something that we tend to overlook. I'll tell you guys, growing up, I had a great uncle on my mother's side, who he was a barber, he was a mechanic, he was a deacon, he was a husband, he was a father, he was the judge and the jury, and he cut hair right in the old kitchen that was a part of his house, and he cut hair for everybody, whether you were a member of the church or lived in the neighborhood, everybody knew Uncle Otis. And while you were sitting there with Uncle Otis, you got to learn a whole lot, okay? You got to learn a whole lot. And I think that my experience is probably much like the experiences of other guys if they were to talk about it openly. I think one of the things that that I remember going to a barbershop and having happen for me was that I was dating a girl. Probably shouldn't have been dating this girl, okay, because I was also kind of messing around with somebody else. And my barber said, "Hey, man, aren't you talking to that girl up the street?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Hey, I just want to let you know that her brother came in." I was like, "Okay." He said, "Well, her brother came in and he was asking questions about you." And that was my barber's way of saying to me, you know what, you probably need to step back and clean up your act a little bit. Okay. So there are a lot of things that happen between barbers and their customers, and we're going to find out a little bit about that tonight. So real quick, I want to introduce you guys to everybody we have on the panel. Okay. We got Lenny Carter. And if you guys don't know who Lenny is, Lenny is a native of Brownsville, Brooklyn, New York. Okay, so I got to throw that out there because everybody's familiar with Brownsville, Brooklyn, New York. Okay, and he's a Stony Brook alum. Got his master's out there in human resources. And Lenny, founder of My True Circle. If you do not know what My True Circle is, My True Circle basically is a form of teletherapy technology, okay? It's an online community of individuals and families helping to address substance abuse, violence, poverty, and mental illness. And Lenny came up with that idea as a result of something he personally experienced and as a result of something that his brother experienced as well. So if you are not familiar with My True Circle, after tonight, go ahead and check out www.mytruecircle.com, and you'll kind of get to see what Lenny's brainchild is about. So we're glad to have him on. In addition to Lenny, we've got Dr. O'Shan Gadsden out of Richmond, Virginia. And Dr. Gadsden has done way more than I can mention tonight, okay? But he's done a lot, and he's the founder of Gadsden Consulting and Evaluation. And you know, the doctor and I have had several conversations before. We kind of link up quite a bit on the psycho-spiritual path. And so he considers himself a psycho-spiritual thinker and motivational speaker, and just a creator of goodness out there. He's always putting good things out there. If I ever call Dr. Gadsden and say, hey, I'm dealing with this health issue or something like that, he's always got something positive to put out there for us. And just so you guys know, he's an alum of Howard and of Columbia University. In addition to him, we've got Gary Taylor. And the first thing that I'm going to say is, you good, fam? Okay. If you guys do not know about You Good, Fam, you need to look up Uphold 31:8. And find out what Gary Taylor is about. A lot of you guys may be familiar with Kid Cudi, okay? A couple years back, Kid Cudi talked about dealing with depression. And shortly after he talked about dealing with depression, you know, a lot of people came forward with, you good, fam? You good, bro? That entire movement. And Gary has been very, very instrumental in pushing that throughout the community. He has earned his degree in social work, master's in social work, and he's an alum of Virginia Commonwealth and George Mason. So, you know, his platform is all about mental health advocacy and consulting. So, you see, we got some heavy hitters. And rounding out the bunch tonight, we've got Jonathan Polidor, okay? And he is out of Louisiana. I'm going to tell you guys that I was so happy that he contacted me because, you know, this is a guy that's going to help keep me young tonight. Okay. He's got the spirit and the traits that really, really going forward, this is what America is going to be about. And so we need to be able to connect to people like Sean, who was going into the elementary schools and the middle schools down in Louisiana. Every week he is live somewhere in Louisiana, talking to young people about overcoming difficulties in life, about connecting to their passion, okay, to their spirit at a young age. And what's really, really grand about that is I can tell you guys that as a middle-aged man, nobody talked to me when I was young about connecting to my spirit and to my passion like that. So the work that he is doing is simply amazing. He's a graduate of the University of Phoenix, got his master's in psychology as well. He's also a published author, What's Your Kick? The Guide to Unlocking Your Passion. If you have not checked that book out, you need to do it. You're able to get it free right now on Amazon Kindle. And if not, you're also able to get it, you know, the hardcover of it for about $20 on Amazon. So again, check him out. So guys, thank you all for joining me tonight. As you all heard me say, I had a couple of experiences with barbers in my life, and I'm sure that you all have as well. But going back to Duran Young's post about not having the experience in the barbershops and knowing really kind of what that's represented for men, how have so many people managed to overlook the efficacy of barbershops? Lenny?
I think sometimes you perceive a barbershop as just a place to get a haircut. And, you know, when you go, sometimes as a woman, you're just looking for maybe style. You know, you have a young son. You don't want to go to a barbershop where you may think men may catcall you or make you feel uncomfortable or out of place. So, you know, your decisions may be based on time, style, and convenience. So at the end of the day, I think it may get lost not understanding that the barbershop is a home for Black men. It's a safety net. Mm-hmm. It gives men jobs and opportunities and show them sense of community in ways that you don't get in just any old other barbershop.
Right, right. I think that's the case. And Doc, like, what is it? How did we really get here? How have we managed? You heard Lenny, but what do you have to say about that? Because I know you have a lot.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about the barbershop, obviously I'm 41 years of age, and I've gone to barbershops for many, many years in the South, in New York, where I'm from. And although there might be very distinct differences geographically in how men emote and what they talk about. Mm. But I found that regardless of where I'm located in terms of the state, that the barbershop is really, to me, a psychological hub. And when I say that, it really is an opportunity from my experience to bond with brothers, to hear some of the most outlandish stories, to laugh and play with each other in ways that sometimes we may not be as vulnerable in other spaces, to say certain things to one another that we are able to say to each other when we're in barbershops. Listen, I've got some of my best prophetic words and words of directions from my barber. So I think the barber also, you know, sometimes takes the role of a psychologist or social worker in many ways. So I think, and then of course, aesthetically, culturally, there's nothing like having a shape up, a fresh cut, does something to all of the men I talk to and me myself personally. You know, I feel different. I feel like I'm empowered. I feel like I can just change the world. So there's so many things happening on multiple levels in the Black barbershop, psychologically, aesthetically, socially. Sometimes there's a lot of hyper masculinity that gets broadcast in barbershops as well that might not be too efficacious. But overall, I've just seen that the barbershop has a great opportunity not only to feel and to see ourselves in ways that we don't often get a chance to emote and get to talk to each other in, but it also serves as a way for us to just culturally connect to one another. And I just want to say something that's so interesting. When I was doing my dissertation, I was doing a lot of reading because my dissertation is looking at masculinity, Black masculinity, and emotional intimacy and hypermasculinity. And I came upon a couple of research, qualitative research projects where researchers were going into Black barbershops and conducting qualitative research around masculinity and manhood. So not only is the barbershop an interpersonal or cultural and aesthetic place, but also there are some researchers that are tapping into the wealth of information that can be extracted in vivo from barbershop context.
Gary, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely, Gary. So you know, I know that you've got your ear to the ground with a lot of younger people, and we talked about, you know, you good fam. So you kind of piggybacking off of Kid Cudi, man. What do you think barbershops are representing today for some of the younger people who may not feel like they're able to go anywhere else?
I think it still serves its purpose. Dr. Gadsden, he pretty much hit the nail on the head with everything he was saying about the barbershop and what it represents. But looking at the youth itself, I think they would still see it as a place of safety, a place of understanding, a place where they feel connected to older gentlemen and also get a fresh cut. I think a lot of people don't understand that, you know, that's a mental health component to it, because you look good, you feel good. And young people, you know, still, if they're anything like us, you got to have that right barber. The line got to be right. And if it don't cut right, you're leaving. And so I think they still have that same element. There might be a little disconnect where, you know, where of us back in like the time with having a barber and going there and sitting there and doing stuff, they now have appointments now. So you sitting in the barbershop for hours on end is a little bit long past due. Now I make appointments with my barber. Now I meet there, I get there, I'm in and out, but you still get that environment. So I think for youth, it's the same thing, but they don't know how much the actual manhood plays into it. They don't know how much mental health plays into it. They just know that they're going to get a fresh cut. And it's just like, and for us, we didn't even know that it's so much mental health related to it as well. Didn't know till now we having this conversation about it. So I think it's still the same consistency, just packaged a little bit differently for the youth.
I see. Okay. Sean, you are dealing with the youth every day, every week.
Yes, sir.
You know, so I think, you know, these guys, they've talked about it, man. I mean, is this something that kids are they telling you that, hey, I'm having these types of conversations with the barber? Or do you find that kids look up to their barbers as role models? What are you seeing out there?
Okay, so can you guys hear me first of all? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So, so my advantage is I have two teenage sons. My oldest son is 18 and my middle son is 15. And with that being said, in this little small city where I live at, my middle son might go to the barbershop at 5 in the evening, right? Give him $20. He goes to, and then like 10 at night, we text him like, man, where you at? He's had his hair cut 4 hours ago. But him and his homeboys, they're just hanging in there for hours on this. That is the hub. And like you said, they're all around older gentlemen talking about what older guys talk about. And they're around their classmates. They're around their basketball teammates. The shop is the place to be, even if you're not getting the cut.
Yeah.
My son is not getting the cut sometimes. And he wants to hang at the barbershop. And he comes home like, Jamari, what you been doing for all those hours? That's your initial parent reaction. But I know, you know, in the subconscious, he does it with his people. And it's a masculine hub, like they say. It's a safe haven. We're not being judged. We're not trying to front and have bravado for the women. We got our mask off. We just kicking it. It's a bunch of guys, man.
Yeah. That's interesting that you mentioned that. So one of the things that I talk a lot about with the barbershop group is self-care, because you know, when you're asking most men, hey, what do you do for self-care? A lot of guys can't really answer. They don't go really in depth when we're talking about self-care. And the barbershop really is, if there's any form of self-care, the barbershop is probably it, you know. But it's that, it's not the superficial self-care that we typically tend to think that it is. As you guys said, there's a lot of other things that are happening for men there. So in my estimation, I guess in my opinion, I say, to me, the barbershop is probably like one of the least expensive places to go engage in self-care. So Lenny, I mean, is that am I right, or am I off? What's going on with it?
Oh man, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with that one. Self-care is all about release. You know, we carry pressures every single day in life. You know, whether you're a young kid going to school and you're dealing with, you know, if you're an athlete and you're dealing with your coaches and your staff or your friends, which just fitting in at times in life, period, a new job. Release is everything to you in self-care, whether it's meditation, whether it's communicating with someone else and just getting it off your chest. And then at the barbershop, that gives you the opportunity. Like the doctor said, you get to laugh, joke, have a good time. And that release and self-care means the world to a lot of people.
Dr. Gasson, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. I'm glad you can hear me. So, you know, when we talk about that affordable self-care, you know, I know you've looked at a lot of historical pieces of the African-American experience. And, you know, for a long time, African-American men and women, they had very few places to go get their hair done. You know, get haircuts and things like that. And, you know, as we move forward, yeah, we have more Black barbers and stuff like that. But I think the one thing that really, really is important is that now people are doing it a little bit more comfortably. And what do I mean by that? What I'm saying is that you're not running away from a slave master to get a haircut really quick. Okay. You're not working a 17-hour day and then trying to, you know, get an edge up. It's a little different today. So it does represent a very, you know, affordable way of taking care of ourselves. But what are some of the other, let's get a little deeper into it. When we talk about that self-care, Dr. Gasson, what are some of the other self-care benefits besides, you know, the haircut, the shave? Because I can tell you, I remember going to the barbershop with my dad, and there were guys, as Sean said, guys who they weren't getting their hair cut. Well, what were they really doing there, Dr. Gasson?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I was just thinking about my own times in a barbershop when I was getting a haircut and the conversation got heated, or whatever we were talking about got really exciting. And this is less of times this would happen when I lived in Brooklyn, and I would finish my haircut and I would literally, as they were saying, sit there for an hour. talking back and forth with different generational, different guys that represent various generations. And I think that what the brothers were hitting on is that there is this cultural interpersonal piece that happens in many Black barbershops where knowledge is dropped, where older cats are able to speak into the lives of younger cats. And I've also seen younger cats challenge some of the thinking process of older cats who need to come up in their own thinking and in their own level of consciousness. So there, I've seen this sort of this bi-directional, generational, intergenerational types of conversations happen where each person that may represent various generations are able to come together and talk loud and maybe a little curse word here and there, maybe a little bravado here and there. But at the end of the day, it's all about love and it's all about uplifting one another. So that's a huge psychological piece when often Black men feel invisible in other contexts, or if they don't feel invisible, they feel as though they're being perceived as a threat. And so what a great place and a context to go where you don't feel like others are perceiving you as a threat, where you don't feel like you're invisible, where you feel like you can be seen and you can be heard and you can talk all the smack that you want to talk and still be received. And so I think that those are the things that come to my mind readily when I think about Black barbershops. It's really this real opportunity for something culturally and psychologically, and from my perspective, because I define spirituality in a very fluid way, for something spiritual to happen. Like when souls are connecting that never have met, you know, sometimes you may see the same people because you may go to the barbershop at the same time. But often I see people I've never seen before. We get into these wonderful conversations, and that's that soul connection that happens as well. So that's what I think about when I think about the barbershop, with the Black barbershop, because I've gone to white spaces. It's a little different, but what Black barbershops have afforded me.
I see. And it's funny. We're gonna talk about this in depth here in a second, but you know, it's funny you mentioned that because I was listening to a medical doctor talking about reminding people that at one point barbers in many communities also were dabbling in some health concerns, some medical health concerns, right? So they wouldn't be doing surgery per se on a customer, but you know, he said that, you know, way back you may have found that you were able to get some cough remedy at the barbershop. yeah you're able to get this cough remedy at the barbershop. So that was like, well, man, that's totally, for a lot of people, we're way away from that. But I can tell you, as a kid, I remember going into the barbershop. And that was at a time when guys were still selling Watkins liniment and things like that out of the suitcases, right? So you had a guy that was, he was kind of like a foot peddler, and he would, you know, link up with the barber, and you could get some things that you would be using medicinally at the barbershop, okay? So a lot of people, man, you can't remember that stuff. And I guess I'm aging myself, dating myself, but yeah, that's one of the experiences that I had. You know, I want to jump into Lenny Carter's paper that he published on Medium and LinkedIn. Lenny, you talked about our parents, you know, going to pastors to deal with stress and mental health issues, or listening to gospel. And that today we tend to listen to hip hop or talk to barbers. You know, we know that this is a go-to for us because it represents a safe space. But, you know, I think now probably my question to you is, how do we harness the good energy from that? Because you know, it's great to be able to talk to your barber, right? It's great to be able to listen to the music and kind of identify with something that Biggie said or something that Kid Cudi said or someone else. But then how do we harness the goodness and help someone move along? And you talked a little bit about that in your paper. So can you give us some bullet points really quick?
Oh, absolutely. You know, life has its curveballs, and it comes to us in different forms, different ways, and at different times. And, you know, we're from the hood for the most part. You know, we struggle. And even if we have money, we're still from the hood because we have disadvantages in our community settings and other places that, you know, put us at a loss. So as we kind of harness our way through our problems, we tend to default into our survival mechanisms and cope with it. You know what? This is normal. You know, our parents dealt with it. Our grandparents dealt with it. We know we're built to be survivors. So our survival mechanisms is just like, you know what? It's another day, and you'll find a release in other ways, whether it's going to the barbershop or at times people fall victim to addictions for that reason. So whether it's alcohol or drugs and sex in some cases, but you know, they find that release in other places and we tend to cope. And a lot of times it's reflected in our music, whether it's artists speaking and singing and giving songs about it from back in the day, gospel or the blues or other forms of music. You see it in the new forms of music as well. And then other times people are crying out for help, whether it's domestic violence, whether it's their battle with addiction, whether it's the grieving process they're going through because of a loss of a loved one. So we've took these years of survival and found ways to cope. And the transition has been hard. Thankfully, the media and the timing of information passing along, mental health has been raising on this pedestal of being a normalized conversation. Right. So the key behind going from coping and just making it over through our problems is to understand the true value of a mental health professional. Talking to our boy or hearing somebody that's grieving it, you know, my challenge with my brother losing his best friend was, you know what? I don't know what to do next. I'm right. cool. You know what I mean? I'm cool. Right. Being there. I tell him, yo, I got your back. Call me whenever you need me. Don't worry about it. But at the end of the day, all I could do was be a listening ear. And right. what a professional does that studied it for years, that see, you know, a ton of patients dealing with different issues, they've learned the science behind understanding, you know what, is your issue biological or is it social? You know, do you have something going on inside yourself that may be an imbalance that, you know, that's when you speak about medications and other things? Or is it social issues that you're dealing with stress, anxiety, and functions of your day-to-day life that we need to approach and figure out ways to overcome those challenges? So a professional can assess those things, and we need to normalize some of the conversation and openness we have in barbershops and translate that to speaking to professionals that can kind of guide us through the process of getting from coping to actually the help we need.
Uh-oh. So, all right. See, now here we go. Dr. Gadsden, I got to pull on you because he just dropped something. Wait now. You mean to tell me that going to the barber or going to the pastor alone, that it may not be good enough? I kind of heard Lenny maybe say that a little bit. So Dr. Gadsden, what's going on, man? This is your area. What's he talking about?
Well, I think Lenny is right on it. to the dismay of people who might be watching us and listening, I think he's right. I was talking about those research projects that I was talking about earlier, that I think that some clinicians have sort of been thinking about how do we use the barbershop to get at what Lenny is talking about. Even if we saw, I think, one research project where they were equipping barbershops with micro counseling skills so that they could assess and then based on their assessments, refer people to mental health practitioners in their area. Or one idea of using the barbershop as a meditation hub, offering meditation sessions during maybe after hours or during some portion of the hours of their services. So I think that there are really great and fluid and creative ways that we as community practitioners can begin to think about and utilize and collaborate with barbershops to get at what Lenny is talking about in helping people go from coping to actually thriving. You know, I do a lot of work with spiritual communities, and my background before psychology was in ministry. And of course, I've moved from a traditional Christian perspective, but I certainly do in my clinical work, as well as my research, look at the clinical utility of religion and spiritual frameworks. And so I also think that it is really important for us to continue to have conversations with pastors around helping them think more fluidly about psychological functioning and about the areas in which they have not been trained to address, and to collaborate with mental health practitioners to either help them consult in terms of workshops or seminars with their leaders in terms of how to integrate clinical or psychological interventions in their spiritual work or in their religious work. So there's a great opportunity to do this, but I think that churches, and there are many Black churches who have begun to do this, so I don't want to sound as though Black churches are not open to this. I do want to say that there are not enough Black churches that are open to this type of consistent collaboration. And I think that this type of collaboration needs to happen so that people in the church are getting what I think is a holistic salvation or holistic spirituality, where they are able to use their spiritual framework, they're able to use their spiritual, their religious framework as a protective factor and as a way to also integrate it in with other things like seeing a therapist on a consistent basis. So yeah, I think that, and I hope that we can have a fluid discussion around this, that the church, that spiritual communities would do well to have consistent collaboration with people who have the training to help them help their practitioners.
So Gary, you're out there and you are on the ground. You got boots on the ground.
Right.
You are at churches, man. You are at schools. You are everywhere. You know, you got a lot of flexibility and mobility out there. We were talking about Kid Cudi, and we've heard Lenny say that. Well, you know, yeah, the music and the barbers get us to a certain point, but maybe, you know, it's no home run. So when you're talking to some of the younger people out in the streets and everything, man, I mean, just how are they using, I guess my question to you is, how are they using hip hop to cope, number one? And then what are you doing with your organization to kind of get them from coping to really, really delving into some of those issues a little further? So how are they using hip hop to cope? And then how are you helping them get beyond that?
Right. Just want to piggyback off of Lenny and Dr. Gadsden. They in my territory now, so they speak in my language. Yeah. Because, you know, with the initial piece with what Lenny was speaking about, I think that at the core of it, and this is the premise of how I approach my mental health advocacy, my mental health trainings, and what we talk about, is that we need to define what mental health is and what mental illness is. And so, you know, I was glad that Lenny brought that piece up as far as, like, you know, the psychosocial stressors, or is it a biological issue going on? Because in my organization, what I do on the streets, in the ground level, is I define mental health as how we deal with our day-to-day life stressors. Mm-hmm. That's how I define it. And that's how I tell people, as the simplest form of how to look at it and define it. Look at it as the same thing as a physical health piece. And then you look at your medical mental illness as a physical illness. Mm-hmm. So on the ground, that's how I try to define it and look at it. And Dr. Gadsden, on the inside of the spirituality component, this is the church itself has a hard time differentiating between a spirit, what we need to pray over, and what's mental health related. And they have a hard time, you know, dealing with that. And that's a separate conversation. But as far as with the hip hop, you know, I hear a lot of times where a lot of teenagers relate to certain music, because we know music is influential on us. It has power over us. It can make us high. It can make us low. I tell people all the time, even I tell teenagers, you don't need to be listening to no type of depressing music if you're depressed. You know, listen to a little bit more upbeat, listen to more of actual uplifting type of music to help balance the act. But, you know, hip hop is very influential on us all as a whole, young, old, whatever, because we relate to that music. I've heard rappers and artists say that their art, their hip hop is their story. You know, they're just telling their struggles and their pain and putting it out there for somebody to relate to. So in this realm where you have these teenagers, preferably black teenagers who don't know, have an outlet, don't have a actual role model, they may not get they may have a role model in the barbershop, they may have a role model in the church or wherever they might be, but they, on a day-to-day, they don't have anybody to speak to. They identify with that hip-hop artist. So, and then once they identify and once they get that influence, then sometimes the drawbacks can happen where they start emulating the behaviors. You feel what I'm saying? And if we know rappers like we know rappers, all of it ain't real.
Right.
And so you will get into the point, you will get into the point where the teenagers are acting out this so-called life from these hip-hop rappers, artists who are putting on a front for promo and money.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of getting working with different rappers or listening to different hip-hop artists, they may be more inspirational or more they can relate to on a different level. Mm-hmm. And so that's sometimes where you'll see the drawback. But at the same time, I can't neglect or negate the issue that they have somebody that they're dealing with or they look up to or they are influenced by on a day-to-day basis, because they may not have that person at all.
Right.
You know, yeah. So it's... Again, I tell a lot of teenagers and I tell a lot of young adults as well, and adults, is that, yeah, you like Future, you know, you look like Lil Pump, Lil whatever. But my artist is J. Cole, Jay-Z, right. Wale, you know, these type of rappers, and they and I grew up with Jay-Z in them. Yeah. Even with his last album, it hit home for me. But It's going to be hard to translate with a younger teenager or young adult who don't relate to Jay-Z. They're not influenced by Jay-Z. They're not moved by Jay-Z.
Right.
So
right.
That's some of the drawbacks you can have sometimes, I think.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, Sean, you know, we know that you're dealing with younger people. We know that you're, like you said, you're in the schools, in the elementary schools, in the middle schools, talking to everybody. You've got teenage sons. do you believe that we're at a point where hip hop can be its own change agent? Do you think that we're there or no?
I think that we are there, as far as, like Gary said earlier, the influence of hip hop right now, I want to say, it's kind of at an all-time high. I mean, all of us on this panel, like Gary said, we all been influenced by our own generation. I know we got an age difference here. Our own generation's forefathers of hip hop had influence, but right now, these kids are really head first about whatever these artists are saying or mumbling or chanting, whatever. These kids are really into it. Like, I really watch a kid with some headphones on the street just walking there mumbling. I can tell he's really going into another place, almost spiritually, with this mumble.
Yeah, right, right.
Uh-huh. So the ability for it to be an agent of change right now is high. Now, will the artists understand the power of words and the power of thought and the amount of influence they have? I don't know.
Okay.
And I don't know how much they even care about that.
I see. So I guess the other question I have for you, you led right into it, is,
okay,
how do we translate this for young people?
Yes. And you asked me that question. So, once again, piggybacking off of what Gary said, I try to put it to the youth, like, man, I go to a school with speak, right? I say, okay, I like being interactive. Who's your favorite rapper right now? They raise their hand. I'm way in Milwaukee. I couldn't believe these kids telling me Lil Boosie is their favorite rapper. It's like 6-7 years ago. I'm like, wow, Lil Boosie from Baton Rouge is your favorite rapper? But at the time, Lil Boosie was incarcerated. So I made a direct correlation, like, look at what he's saying in his songs. If you're a young lady in the audience right now, look what he's saying about you as a young woman. How do you feel about these lyrics? The young men, what is he telling you to go out there and do? And then look where he ends up. And like Gary just said, I highlight my favorite artists, Talib Kweli, Common Sense, Mos Def, you know, guys like this, Black Thought. These guys are highly articulate, intellectual, phenomenal guys. And they don't, you don't see all this legal trouble following them.
Right.
Look at Nas, his lyrics are actual college courses now. Tupac Shakur. They have actual college curriculum on Tupac lyrics. I don't imagine 20 years from now they're doing a college curriculum on you know, Future, whoever you might name from this day. I don't imagine curriculum built around that. So I try to show the kids real playing. Look at what you guys you like are doing and what's happening. And look at some of the older guys that we had. Those guys drop a lot of knowledge and jewels in their rhymes, even though when I saw it like that, when we were kids in the 80s and the 90s, like, man, the Wu-Tang Clan here and that now, they drop a lot of science in their rhymes. Talking about the cosmos and the astrology and the stars and the mathematics. Yeah. I'm like, wow, look at AZ rhymes. Look at Raekwon's rhyme. Look at, like I said, once again, Tyler Kwali. Look at what they're saying.
Right.
And what are these guys saying now? For your subconscious to get anything, Biggie Smalls, Jay-Z, they have some gun rhymes and some female things that weren't so glamorous. But weaved in between that, they were dropping stuff still.
Yes.
These guys aren't dropping anything anywhere in the whole 3-minute 40-second song. You can't get no morsels, no nuggets. And I'll leave that in my boy.
So guys, we're gonna keep it moving. I'm gonna jump back over here to Lenny. Lenny, you talked about if I'm not mistaken, I believe when Duran made that post, you kind of came in and said that barbershops kind of represented the black man's country club. But I got a really serious question for you. You know, do you think that barbershops are safe spaces for men who may be maybe less masculine or not alpha males, or even, you know, men who are gay within the black community? Are barbershops safe spaces for those men as well?
Absolutely. Great question. I think barbershops have evolved over the years to always be the home of the community. And any barbershop represents the people of a community from all walks of life. You could be poor, you could be, you know, a fiend coming to the block to ask for money, or you could be someone with just a different choice or preference in life. And a barbershop is always going to welcome you to the community and give you a chance to kind of be yourself, you know, at the end of the day and share certain things. So, you know, it always takes time because, you know, we all walk different paths in life that our comfort level of sharing and how we share is individual, you know, at the end of the day. But when it comes to kind of a community space, the barbershop is always going to be a place and home where people from the community can come in, be themselves. And, you know, you meet people that are 5 years old and the choices they make at 15, whether it's running around in the streets, hustling and, you know, committing crimes or choosing a different lifestyle, they're still going to be home because they were raised in a barbershop and that's family.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, that's you know, I think that it's important that you. It's important that you say that, because I think that when someone, when they read that comment, Lenny, they probably kind of went like, wait a minute, wait, country club, what's going on here, right? But as all of you guys know, with the barbershop group, we are an organization and we say that we are a mental health organization for men. And we always say that means all men, okay? So we pretty much based it off of the barbershop. We know that gay men still get their hair cut, right? And gay men still have mental health issues. It doesn't. You may have some different components here and there, but it does not change. And I think that there were some barbershops that we probably have all had very good experiences in. I think that there were probably barbers that we had good experiences with. But we also probably had exposure to toxic things in barbershops as well, right? And I think that when it comes to those toxic things in barbershops, as mental health professionals, we want to be talking to barbers about, you know, well, how do we address that? You know, a week ago, I interviewed a marriage and family therapist who was also a licensed cosmetologist. And she talked about the differences between, you know, some of the healthy barbershops and some of the unhealthy barbershops. So Dr. Gadsden, let's talk about, you know, what we can do, or I guess maybe like what are some of the concerns that you have when it comes to barbershops and them maybe not being safe spaces or being places of efficacy? What are some of the things that concern you about barbershops being negative spaces?
Well, I think that with all things, when Black men get together and we don't, and we keep reifying these very hyper-masculine hegemonic ways of being and carrying our masculinity, we don't give ourselves time to deconstruct and to think deeply about the impacts of that perpetuation of hegemonic, if you want to call it, our toxic masculinity on other men who may not share some of the same characteristics that we have. Particularly when we're talking about gay or bisexual men, oftentimes I have never seen, that's not true, I have seen this, but on a consistent basis, people may not be disrespectful to gay or bisexual men who are getting their haircuts or in barbershops, but their rhetoric is quite homophobic, or their rhetoric is quite hyper-masculine, and sometimes can make men who identify as gay or bisexual not feel as welcome or not feel as authorized to be a part of the conversations that they might want to be because they may feel disrespected or invalidated as well. And it's not just around sexual orientation there. It could be around class. It could be around age. It can be all sorts of social constructions of identity that may be dissimilar or may be different, where Black men may not know how to sort of navigate or relate to each other in positive ways based on those differences. So I think that for me, and this may sound very like cliche, but the barbershop has an opportunity to be a radical space of resistance. And what I mean by that is not, so I think it is important for barbers to take their referent power or their sort of the power that they have or the influence that they have and use it in the moment. And when they hear homophobic rhetoric, or they hear sexist rhetoric, or they hear hyper-masculine rhetoric that's harmful, that they stop it in the moment. And they use their power and their influence to say, we're not going to tolerate that. This is not the type of conversations that we're going to have. But I think it's also equally the responsibility of people that are patrons. I have many times gotten in trouble for this. I've heard rhetoric in the barbershop and I raised my hand and be like, oh no, that's, you know, I don't see it like this. I see it very differently. Or maybe you should think about this differently, your brother. Or brother, that's probably something you shouldn't say. And of course we get into those conversations, those back and forth. But I think unless people start using their voice and resisting rhetoric or resisting behavior that might be negative or might be harmful, it's just going to continue to perpetuate itself. So I think that barbers and patrons, we all have a responsibility to use our influence to make the barbershop a radical place of resistance and to defy any rhetoric or any behavior that is both homophobic, sexist, classist, et cetera, et cetera.
All good points. Thank you very much. I mean, you definitely schooled us on that one. And we had a comment come in, and he was just, you know, just reiterating that, yeah, we definitely do not want to, you know, have barbershop culture that accepts, you know, toxic ideas, homophobic ideas, you know, those things that probably create some mental health difficulties for us, right? So Gary, again, you good, fam? I mean, I can't get enough of that. I just so look,
yes, sir.
You go into the barbershop and you know, you walk in and everybody is, you know, green, what's up, what's happening, you know. Like typically what we do is if somebody asks, hey, what's up, you know, how you doing, whatever, what's going on, well, we give these really yellow answers.
Yeah.
So, okay, what happens, you know, if I walk into the barbershop, man, and somebody says, you good, fam? And I'm like, no, I'm not. right? Mm. The cool thing about barbershops is that these are places where we can kind of go and actually say, you know what? Yeah, no, I'm not good. I'm not good, you know? But what are some of the things that you're doing, Gary, to really, really help people understand that there's a different way to answer the question, you good, fam? Because it's not just like, yeah, I'm all right. No, that's not what you mean by that. So how do you get people to open up and talk to you?
I think, you know, with this whole movement, this shirt I have on was the start of the movement of you good, fam. You guys can see it. And on the back, it says, you good, bro. And then we have a female version, which says on the back, says, you good, sis. So when I sold out about 100 shirts of these actual shirts, and my whole goal was to invite that conversation. Yo, we always say, you good, fam, or yo, you good, bro? Yeah, I'm straight, you know what I'm saying? But not really, you know? And I wanted to get, like, again, with everything I do in my work and my mental health advocacy and at the ground level, is I want to educate at the simplest level, the simplest form, because we're never going to get to the point of understanding what mental health is, or taking care of our any type of mental illness, or understand these psychosocial stressors, these complexities of the things that we go through on a different basis, if we don't understand at the ground level what mental health is. So with the slogan, I was trying to open and invite the conversation of, you good, fam, or you good, bro, you good, sis. And if not, well, let's talk about it. Because, okay, if you're feeling down, you don't feel good, okay, well, what can I do to help? And if it gets to a severe point, get them the right help that they need, medical help, or call the crisis lines, anything like that. But when I looked at it, I was like, if I can get people to sit here and understand the slogan at the simplest level about mental health, and then ask their friends, their family members, their coworkers the same knowledge, and get them to open and have more open dialogue about the stresses that we go through on a daily basis, then that will open up the realm of seeking therapy if need be, or seeking the mental illness treatment that you may need, or mental health treatment in general, or maybe just a conversation about how you deal with your stress on a day-to-day basis. Because, you know, we all deal with those things differently. But taking from one another, open up that dialogue, reducing that stigma, because every time we think about mental health, we always think about somebody that's crazy. And again, that's not the actual case. Mental health is every day. So that's what I'm doing with that whole, that you good, fam, that you good, bro, that you good, sis, is at the simplest form, let's open up the dialogue and be upfront with one another about what's going on with us on a day-to-day basis. And it's proven to be helpful. A lot of people, older adults, young adults, people that have never even dealt with mental health in general, have come up to me and said, look, I bought this shirt and you've opened my eyes to what mental health is, and making sure that I'm checking myself on a daily basis, and also checking those around me, my loved ones, my family, my friends, coworkers, to making sure that they're good, fam, or they're good, bro, you're good, sis, on a deeper level. And which has been amazing, because I didn't know it was going to be this big. So it's been amazing to see that, because I've got a lot of testimonies from people saying, I'm understanding on a ground level what you're talking about and what you're getting at. Am I actually now implementing that in my life?
Wow, that's very good. I'm glad to hear that you're getting that response. It's difficult work that you guys are doing, but it's necessary work. Okay, absolutely. So, Sean, man, you know, again, hitting the young people, man. Can't forget about the young people, because a lot of times we do forget about the young people, right? We talk to the young people and we talk at the young people, but we don't listen. So, man, I mean, like, how are you breaking the ice with them? You know, Gary's talking about, you good, fam. And I think that may be for a group of individuals that may be a little bit older. So what are some of the things that you're doing to break the ice with young folks?
I will definitely answer that question. I want to piggyback on something before that, if I'm allowed to, on this platform. But talking about the negative and the toxic environment that some barbershops could be, I would say, for myself being here for the past 5 or 6 years, they know for a fact, whenever Sean come in that door, I'm going to drop some knowledge. You know, whatever y'all talking about before I came in, because I want to be a representative Oh, this is the air whenever I come in here. This is the environment whenever I come in here. I'm setting the tone. You know, we got degrees on this panel. A lot of times in our individual communities, we are some of the only guys in the community with the degree in the shop. I'm not saying that to be an elitist. I'm just saying that we're trying to be the torchbearers in our community. So for the past 5 or 6 years, when I come in the shop, I love to debate, by the way. I love debating. I'm like Stephen A. Smith. And we do it in a fun, respectful, loving, no hurting anybody, no belittling kind of way. Mm-hmm. But I'm just making that point to say that whenever I come in the door, I'm trying to set the tempo and the tone of whoever in here for right now, for the next hour and a half, you're going to learn something. You're going to learn something. Whatever's on TV about Kim Kardashian or Kanye West or Dez Bryant, I'm going to put a psychology spin on that thing and make you think about it beyond the surface. So that's that piece. But as far as the icebreakers go, you know what I found the word the most? Finding out, what is that child interested in? Let's put the whole mental health piece down. Let's not make it a quote-unquote session. What do you even like? Oh, you like rap. Great. Guess what? I like rap too. Because I go in there with the polo shirt on and the slacks. And they're like, oh, come on, Mr. Sean, man. You don't know nothing. And we start talking about rap, and I'm showing you how much I know about rap. And I'm showing you how, once again, the guys that I like, how they put their rhymes together. You don't like to read and write, but you want to be a rapper. How can that go together? Look how this guy put these words together. Look at this guy's expansive vocabulary. And now the child kind of like, you know what? I never thought about that. So I find ways to break ice by finding what they like and then like honing in on that. You like basketball? Great. And now whenever I meet you on a weekly basis, I have a common ground to go to, and I can spin off different analogies and teaching points on that common ground. If I go there straight on the psychology or today we're doing coping skills, they're like, man, come on, man. I don't feel like doing the activity sheet. I don't feel like doing the cards. I don't feel like doing none of it because I don't care about that. I care about rap. So let's make rap an activity. I make my clients write rhymes in real time. Like today we're going to rap about a coffee mug. You got 3 minutes. Show me whatever rhyme you can make, a 16 about a coffee mug. And we really do that. And then from there, you know I care about you and I relate to you. So now I can talk about, man, look, let's discuss anger now. Let's discuss handling your coping skills. Let's discuss your stresses. Let's discuss your father died last year, you know, at that point. Mm-hmm, I can't do it before that point, I find.
Right,
so that's my answer.
Yeah, so you have to be able to build up the trust level with the young people in order for them to talk to you. Absolutely, absolutely. And I talk a lot about not closing off people's spirits. And I think that that's a lost art for a lot of individuals. You know, it's difficult to get somebody to talk to you if you've already helped close their spirit to you. You know, they're just going to be like, yeah, I don't hear you. I'm going somewhere else. And we all know what it's like because we were teenage boys at some point and we had somebody in our lives who, yeah, no, I'm not listening to you, you know? So we know that that's real. So thank you, Sean, for your answer. Lenny, you know, let's talk about, we know barbers are listening to a lot of things. And one of the viewers mentioned from the prior interview with the marriage and family therapist that guys were coming in and talking about side pieces and stuff like that as well, right? But let's talk about barbers and the possibility of them getting training for mental health first aid, because it sounds like there's a window for that. There's an avenue for that. So, you know, do you think that this is something that would be beneficial to barbers? And if so, how could they do it? How could they go about it?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great question. I mean, one of the cool things about it is most barbers are hustlers. So, you know, if they're already out there hustling, this is another tool that they could add to their belt to hustle up as well. But the cool part is the National Council of Behavioral Health offers a mental health first aid course that anybody can take, a regular citizen. You don't have to go to school. You don't have to have a degree. You don't even need a high school diploma to take this course that will educate you on actually identifying someone that's struggling or having a tough mental health issue. And just the different labels and the aspects that come into understanding mental health, it'll give you that education to know that 20 minutes, half an hour that you're cutting someone's hair, hearing their life story, recognizing that they may be a danger to themselves, long-term or short-term or someone else, having that knowledge is priceless. So I would recommend any barber, any beautician, any stylist that's talking to people and dealing with people on a regular basis, definitely going to get their mental health first aid certificate.
Thank you, Lenny. And just so you guys know, you know, when we talk about the mental health first aid certificates, it doesn't take a lot of time to earn a mental health first aid certificate. It, you know, and they do these things all around the country in urban cities, all around the country. You know, it probably will take you 8 hours. There are some 16-hour courses out there. I mean, you can do it on a Saturday. You can pick a day. Because they do them at high schools. In fact, some organizations they'll come to your churches, they'll come to your religious institutions to offer these certifications for you. And it's just like CPR. It's a good thing to have, right? And I think that it's something that we need to look into. Go ahead, Lenny.
And I just want to add to that, talking about hustles and when you mentioned the hours, they have a leadership and training course for you to be an instructor as well. So if you want to come aboard and teach other barbers and get an environment where you want to pass the message along and make a couple of dollars as a speaker as well, that's a huge opportunity with not a lot of time invested into it.
Awesome. Awesome. And, you know, just so you guys know, we're not talking about a concept that's out in left field right now, guys, because I can tell you another thing that some barbers are doing. Some barbers have actually learned how to monitor blood pressure for their clients. Speaking particularly about African-American men, you know, 40% of African-American men in 2016 had high blood pressure. All right. And a doctor from, I believe he studied in Chicago, but I think he practices now in New York. He taught some barbers how to gauge blood pressure for their clients. And it's just a program that's been rolling out in different cities around the country. And it is working for whatever reason, because the barbershop is a safe space. We feel more comfortable actually getting a physical right there in the barbershop. So again, take the opportunity to look into the mental health first aid classes. It's something else to add to your toolkit, and it's something that we all need. You're already doing it anyway, so add it to your resume. Okay, so guys, we are starting to wind down. We're running out of time. So I want to try to get some closing thoughts from everybody. Dr. Gadsden, I want to start with you. Again, I know that you're dealing with a lot of spiritual communities and just, you know, focusing on some identity issues for men. So if you could just leave the audience with a good word, sir.
Well, that's a lot of pressure. Just a
good word. Yeah, I know it is. I know it is, but you can handle it. You can handle it.
Well, I think the conversations have just been magnificent, just to listen to all of these really beautiful and talented brothers talk about the work in which they're doing and their expertise. I think what I'd like to continue to see happen is for us as brothers who are engaged in communities to do more of these types of conversations, but then to actualize these conversations and structure them in some sort of community intervention or initiative, because there's so much knowledge and so much wisdom amongst us that we really together can really, with our various specialties and various focus, can really really shift not only the dialogue, but shift the perception within our community and help our brothers and sisters ascend to another level of consciousness. I also think that it really isn't a great idea, this first aid mental health program. I like to see, you know, I was just thinking about it as a researcher and seeing how I could convince some barbers to do it and then sort of record some pre-post sort of research around sort of what that looks like in real time and with, you know, some customers who would be interested in being a part of that research project to see, you know, how to see the types of the things that are happening when they get this training and the types of things that they're hearing and how they're actually implementing their training with their customers. So that we really can, because I think that what happens is that we have these types of conversations and then we still are looking at other communities to do things for us. But if we can really create this body of literature ourselves and really really document what we're doing and document the efficacy of what we're doing, that we, number one, can first of all be in charge of our own lives and our own community, but number two, we can get funding and be able to get this funding to continue the work and to add on to the things that need to be done in our community. But we have to go beyond rhetoric and go beyond just having these beautiful conversations and sort of like, now let's put our feet to the fire and really think about these things in a very fluid way. So I hope that that is something that gets started as a consequence of these types of conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting that you mentioned doing some clinical research. There is someone who has done some clinical research, and I have to look up that link. Forgot the name of the individual, but she was a social worker, and she took a nurse into a barbershop, and they just kind of talked to the men for a little while and did some clinical stuff there, you know, just vitals and measuring vitals over time and things like that. So I'll make sure that you get that stuff because you may be able to network with the individual who did that. And I think that there's ample opportunity to do that today. Gary, so, you know, I think that when we're talking about mental health, you know, phrasing things in terms of you good fam and you good bro, brings it down to a level. You know, we're not talking about, hey man, are you depressed? You know, are you obsessive, compulsive? Are you experiencing this? And I know you're not getting into all of the fancy language and everything anymore, right? It's just, hey, you're good. Going on that we need to talk about. You know, what advice do you have for somebody who may be struggling with admitting that they either need help or that just they're unsure about life? You know, they've got some things going on and they don't know how to handle themselves, but there's so much pressure to maintain that facade, man. So, you know, what do you want to tell the people in the audience you're dealing with that right now?
You know, that's a tough question. By trade, I'm a crisis therapist on my daily 9-to-5. So I have a different way of looking at certain things. But I would say to that person who feels overwhelmed or feels like the weight of the world is on their shoulders right now, and dealing with things and kind of having some fear about going to seek therapy or getting help or reaching out that hand because of their pride, or maybe they're scared. I would say, and I tell people a lot, some of my friends, a lot of my friends and family understand that eventually all of it's going to come to the light. And all of it's going to come to a head. Mentally, there's going to be some struggles. And then if that's not addressed, then physically, there'll be some struggles. Because we know that the physical and the mental work hand in hand. You know, so, for example, when you talk about the high blood pressure thing, I'm only like 29, but I was on high blood pressure medications for a while in my early 20s, in mid-20s. I have high blood pressure on both of my sides of my family, along with various other different diseases. And I went to the cardiac doctor and I spoke with this doctor and I did the whole stress test where you run on the treadmill and you do everything. I was only like 27, 28. And it was eye-opening because I was in this place with a bunch of older adults. Yeah. And here I am, 27, 28, doing a stress test for, you know, my heart. Right. And they did all of the findings, didn't find anything. They found that my, you know, some stuff was a little bit thin because I was on blood pressure medications for a while.
Okay.
But they found out that it was like, well, you stress. You're stressing. And at this point in time, I was like maybe like my first, second year in this postgraduate from the MSW program. I was in a, getting married. I was starting a job as a crisis therapist. And come to find out, I was internalizing stress. So my point to that is that once those, if those things don't get addressed mentally, stress-wise, they're going to start popping up in different areas of your life. And whether that be your heart, whether that be your sleep, whether that be your anxiety, whether that be, you know, just you snapping off at your family members, anything, is going to start to come to a head. So I would say, if you're scared to seek therapy or first, or just, you know, not kind of fearful of doing it, identify a support system where you can actually release some of that information or release some of that stress that you have going on. Identify a support system, identify somebody that you can vent to that can help you validate your feelings and what you're going through and help you navigate along the way. If it does get severe, then there you need help. Like you need some form of therapy or some form of, you know, treatment that can help if everything's going on. But I also tell two people outside the support system and outside the severity, you can't go at all these stresses at once. One step at a time, day by day,
yes,
one issue at a time. Because you're never going to be able to address your stressors going on, going at every single thing all at the same time. It's not going to happen. And
that's right.
You do it one by one, it'll work one by one. I always tell too as well, when you hold on to this stress, it's like a balloon. So it starts like this. And then if you internalize it or put it away, then it gets bigger.
Mm.
And then it gets bigger.
Yeah.
And then you don't do nothing about it, it gets bigger. And then it gets bigger and bigger, bigger, bigger until it pops.
Right.
And the same thing can happen if you actually address those stresses one by one, because then you can go from here to here, to here, mm-hmm, to here, yeah, to here, to close it off. So right.
I hear you. That's a very good illustration of how stress can become unmanageable, and then how we can start to work on things. But Sean, really quick, man. You got your book out there, What's Your Kick, right? You're really trying to get people to connect to their passions and really stop living a life of doldrums, man. So what's your message to the people? You got 2 minutes. Give them your message. Like,
here we go. 2 minutes of madness, right? The elevator pitch.
2 minutes. But, 2 minutes.
I would say my main point of my book, What's Your Kick? Unlocking Your Passion. Beyond working with the kids that you know about, I work with adults as well.
Mm-hmm.
And just having my own personal case study, I found a common thread that so many people were just living unfulfilled lives that led to depression, mm-hmm, that led to the anxiety and the stress. You having low self-esteem, you having a lack of self-confidence because you can't resonate with anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I found the more people that found that passion in life had more zest, they had more zeal, they had more natural joy in their life. So I wrote the book to try to unlock that in a lot more people to possibly find some joy as well. Like Mr. Gary just said, to make that balloon a little bit smaller in your life. It won't go away, but you can reduce it. So yes, my 2-minute elevator pitch is finding your passion, finding your joy at any cost, at all costs. And then that can help you reduce your mental stress, right? I'll leave it at that.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Sean. Yes, sir. So Lenny, we'll wrap up with you, man. MyTrueCircle.com. It is a beautiful, beautiful thing that you have done. I can't speak highly enough about that. I always tell people, hey, look, there's no reason why you should be sitting there saying you can't find a therapist. You can't find, you don't have access to someone and nobody's around or anything like that. It's therapy at your fingertips. So Lenny, what is it that you would like to leave with the audience tonight?
I mean, you know, following up these guys, I just want to piggyback on everything that they said. It begins with self-reflection in a lot of ways. You always realize that something is going on, but you just need to engage at the end of the day. Whether it's a close friend, whether it's someone you know, start the conversation of your life. Don't get scared, nervous, clam up, and don't share what may be going on in your relationship or at home. And, you know, that was the goal with True Circle. You know, I dealt with my brother. He did some time locked up. You know, he's a tough guy where therapy is not his first choice. And being on the phone with him and recognizing that, you know what, it's not easy for him while he's in Ohio to go to therapy while I'm in New York and I'm not there to support him. So there has to be a way for me to build some transparency with people in our communities where they could find a therapist easily by, oh man, I'm stressed or I have anxiety. And it doesn't have to be a clinical name. It just could be a bad day that you say, I need someone to talk to that's unbiased, that don't know all of my life. And the misconception is that therapists tell you what to do. And it's really you learning how to deal with things on your own.
Your own. That's right.
That's what I leave it with. It's learning how to deal with yourself in better ways. And they just the kind of the roadmap or the GPS to help you get there.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you spoke particularly about that, because a lot of people do have misconceptions about what mental health is. You know, it's like, hey, well, are you the guru that's going to fix everything for me? And it's like, yeah, no, that's not what this is about. You know, there's no magic wand coming out. I heard someone say one time that, you know, the therapist pretty much helped me pull out some of the things that I just kind of like, I knew, but it was just so much going on. I couldn't put things in the right order for myself. Okay. And again, guys, you know, sometimes therapy may be a short-term thing. And if it's a longer-term thing, that's okay too. Do what it is that you have to do to create happiness for yourself and your life. So, you know, with that, guys, I'm glad to have had all of you on. Thank you for spending some time with me this evening. To you all listening, I thank you all for listening. Hopefully you all enjoyed it. And if you enjoyed it, you are able to follow us on Facebook at The Barbershop Group. We are also on Instagram at The Barbershop Group and Twitter as well at The Barbershop Group. And if you would like to get involved or care to contribute to us monetarily, again, it takes money to get these things going and keep them going and have awesome guests on the show. You can go to www.patreon.com/TheBarbershop Group and make a contribution. That helps us continue the show and some wonderful things that we are doing for men in our communities. So with that, guys, we will wish you all a good night and get ready for a happy and productive week. And again, listen carefully to the things that these men said. If you are in need of help, please reach out. There is no reason to live on an island anymore by yourself. So have a good night, and we will talk to you soon.
The Barbershop Group provides safe spaces for men to discuss issues of well-being and mental health. The Barbershop Group also serves as a resource to the community, providing consultations and public speakers through partnerships with attorneys, mental health professionals, family agencies, religious institutions, and other advocates. In the near future, the Barbershop Group seeks to renovate dilapidated residential and commercial properties in urban areas to create respite shelters for displaced men. We will also host mentorship retreats and workshops for young men and adults to foster growth through our Iron Sharpening Iron and our Rebuilding Men programs. In addition, we host a weekly podcast covering issues of mental health, homelessness, financial literacy, education, and leadership. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please email us at info@thebarbershopgroup.org. Visit our Facebook page or call 313-585-9948 for more information.